I'm Mike Mason with a check of the local news on KDLG. A man from Dillingham has been arrested for allegedly dealing heroin and other drugs. Officers with the Dillingham Police Department arrested Vaughn Clark of Dillingham Tuesday afternoon after receiving a tip that he was dealing heroin from a woman that was found by her probation officer to be under the influence of heroin. Clark was stopped by officers around 4:30 Tuesday afternoon in the parking lot of the L&M Hardware Store in Dillingham. The affidavit from the arresting officer indicates that Clark exited the silver SUV that he was driving and immediately threw his cell phone on the ground, breaking it. Clark was found to be in possession of brass knuckles and a large amount of cash. A subsequent search found that Clark was allegedly in possession of four syringes, which the police department claims were filled with a liquid substance consistent with black tar heroin. Officers also report finding a scale with a brown residue consistent with heroin. They also found methadone pills and an aluminum foil containing a white powder that they report was consistent with meth. Officers also found several empty syringes. Vaughn Clark was arrested on charges of drug distribution and possession. He was arraigned Wednesday morning on seven drug charges. His bail was set at $20,000 cash. Witnesses at the arraignment suggest that Clark was suffering from withdrawal symptoms. He participated in the arraignment wrapped in a blanket and was apparently sweating heavily. The woman who provided police with the initial tip reported that Clark sold her heroin and then smoked heroin with her. Vaughn Clark has a long rap sheet with convictions on drug and alcohol charges, along with theft, assault, DUI, and driving without a license. At the time of Tuesday's tip, the Dillingham Police Department was searching for Clark on reports that he was driving without a license. In many ways, the entire Bristol Bay region could be characterized as economically depressed. Much of the region has high unemployment, and the entire region has high energy costs. One of the few organizations with money to spend is the Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation, which is one of the six community development quota organizations set up to serve Southwest and Western Alaska. BBEDC's annual report for 2013 was released this month, and it's been sent to nearly every household in the Bristol Bay region. Norm Van Vactor is the organization's CEO. He says 2013 was a year that included some significant challenges.
The pollock industry probably hit one of its all-time lows in terms of market conditions. The cod industry, specifically the longline cod and the midwater trawl cod fisheries, again hit all-time lows in terms of market conditions. And, you know, pollock and cod are a significant source of our revenue stream.
In 2012, BBEDC and their partners harvested over 56 million pounds of pollock. That increased by 2 million pounds last year, up to 58 million pounds. BBEDC's cod harvest back in 2012 was 4.7 thousand metric tons. That increased to 4.8 thousand metric tons last year. Van Vactor suggests that the market conditions for pollock and cod have improved this year.
Significant bounce back, yeah, and especially the cod sector. We've seen a bounce back as high as 15 to 20% on market prices in the cod sector. A generalization might be that we're probably 10% ahead on our pollock pricing as compared to, you know, 2013 and 2014. There's a lot of good things happening right now. I mean, I hate to say this, but what helps us in the pollock sector is to see the European quota go down. Well, just in this last week, you know, the European quota that they announced going into next year is going to be reduced by about 10%. At the same time, the likelihood that our pollock quota is going to go up is significantly positive. In the last 2 weeks, you know, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has come out with the crab quotas for this fall and for Opies in the start of the new year. Both of those quotas are up significantly over what they've been the last couple of years. So, yeah, in 2014 and really as of even the last couple of weeks, there's been some significant news for us on the fishing front.
Every year, the six CDQ organizations get allocations of groundfish, crab, and halibut, but Van Vactor notes that BBEDC has additional significant investments in the crab fisheries in the Bering Sea.
We have, obviously, the CDQ allocation of crab that came with the whole CDQ structure organization. But since that time, BBEDC, outside of our CDQ allocation, has also made investments in hardware and steel and over time is bought into, and we currently own approximately 50% of the Mariner Group, which is considered probably the most effective, efficient, well-run, best boats on the water as it relates to the crab industry. So we basically now own the vessels that our CDQ crab is caught on. In addition to that, the board and BBDC through the years has acquired IFQ shares on the open market. And in fact, in 2013, BBDC went out and we've essentially maxed out what we can buy in terms of IFQ, individual fishing quota shares of king crab and Opelio crab.
BBEDC now owns nearly 5% of the available IFQ shares in those two fisheries. Van Vactor says that investment looks like it might pay off in the short term.
So in 2013, one of the big things that BBEDC did was buy a significant amount of additional crab. So especially in light of the recent significant increase in the quota, you know, that investment last year really looks golden.
The quota of Bristol Bay Red King crab is up 16% compared to last year, and the Opelio quota is up 25%. The King and Snow Crab fisheries opened up on Wednesday. At the end of the last year, BBEDC had total net assets of over $228.6 million. That's up from the $220.8 million in net assets recorded at the end of 2012. BBEDC's mission, like the other CDQ organizations, is to promote economic growth and opportunities in the region. The most obvious aspect of that investment comes in the form of programs focused on Bristol Bay's one-of-a-kind commercial sockeye salmon fishery. Last year, 66 resident fishermen used the organization's pre-season advance program, and over 100 vessels received upgrades through the vessel upgrade program. Van Vactor is hoping that more local residents will utilize BBEDC's permit loan program, which moved 7 people through the process last year.
It's a better number than we've had, but it's certainly not what we hope for. You know, I'll consider that program a success when we get 15 or more a year. I don't know what the current numbers are. I think it has dropped lower, but you know, over the years, kind of the attrition rate at times has been 12, 13, 14 permits lost every year. So in my mind, until we exceed the permits brought back into the region and the permits lost, you know, that'll be the time when I'll say that this program is working and we've turned the corner, so to speak.
Another obvious way that BBEDC invests in the region is through educational opportunities. The organization's Harvey Samuelson Scholarship Trust awarded 87 scholarships in 2013, totaling over $402,000. BBEDC annually sponsors a hands-on salmon camp for teenagers, and for adults, the organization has a college development fund. Last year, 125 residents used the fund to pay for over $131,000 worth of classes towards their college education. The BBEDC 2013 annual report has been mailed to households across the region and can be found on the organization's website. After calling for an expansion into the investigation of fraud allegations in the Alaska National Guard, Alaska Governor Sean Parnell's request has been answered. A team of auditors from the National Guard Bureau arrived in Alaska this week to determine the adequacy and the management of federal resources handled by the Alaska National Guard. The Director of Internal Review, Chief of Audit Operations, and a senior auditor assigned to National Guard Internal Review Office are the officials that will conduct the investigation. The review audit is directly linked to the alleged theft and misuse of federal resources by service members in the Alaska National Guard. The Aleutian Pribilof Island Community Development Association opened a fuel facility in Falls Pass earlier this month. KDLG's Thea Card has the details.
The Falls Pass Fuel Company, or FPFC, is now supplying fuel for local heating and road vehicle needs. The APICTA-owned Bering Pacific Seafoods plant operations, the city of Falls Pass, and the fishing fleet. CEO of APICTA, Larry Cotter, says after the Peter Pan fisheries closed the fuel facility it owned for decades, his organization saw an opportunity.
They closed that facility down about a year ago. And that put us in a situation where there was a desperate need in the community for somebody to open and operate a fuel facility. So we stepped up to the plate to do it.
FPFC operates 6 tanks with a combined capacity of 210,000 gallons of diesel, stove oil, and gasoline. Cotter says the construction of the new facility cost $2.3 million and took 8 months of planning, followed by 3 months of construction. The tanks are situated near the False Pass City Dock, and Cotter says will be used for fuel sales to fishing vessels as well as land vehicles.
We can provide fuel to any vessel. We do have a processing plant in False Pass called Bering Pacific Seafoods, and we've just completed a $16 million expansion of that facility, so it will operate year-round. Having fuel services available in False Pass will certainly help encourage fishermen and others to deliver to Bering Pacific Seafoods, knowing that they can also acquire fuel there.
False Pass is located on the eastern side of Utimac Island in the Aleutian Islands, over 600 air miles southwest of Anchorage. Cotter says a lot of vessels already go through False Pass on their way from the Gulf of Alaska to the Bering Sea or Bristol Bay. He says this new fuel facility should prove convenient for those vessels as well. In Dillingham, I'm Thea Card.
Arguments have been scheduled on the federal government's request to dismiss a lawsuit over the Interior Department's refusal to allow for a road from King Cove to an all-weather airport at Cold Bay. Government attorneys say the decision by the Interior Secretary, Sally Jewell, was reached after 5 years of environmental analysis and public outreach. They say Jewell wasn't obligated to approve a road, and her decision is owed deference by a federal judge. The state joined the city of King Cove, tribal governments, and individuals in challenging Jewell's denial of a road through the Eisenbeck National Wildlife Refuge that can improve access for emergency flights. Arguments on the motion to dismiss are set for Monday in Anchorage. On Sunday, a federal judge overturned Alaska's 16-year ban on same-sex marriage. He ordered the state to recognize legal marriages made in other states and to issue new licenses immediately. By Monday morning, applications appeared in courthouses across the state. They are gender neutral, with boxes labeled Party A and Party B instead of bride and groom. KCAW's Emily Kwong went to the courthouse to meet the first couple to fill them out.
By 11:30 a.m., there was no line at the courthouse, just the ding of an elevator door. Heidi Horner Raffelli and Carla Horner Raffelli had come to apply for a marriage license.
So whoever wants to be Party A can be Party A.
Okay. But I'm 52, and I just never thought I would have this opportunity. So perhaps that's why I'm a little nervous.
That's Heidi, Party B.
What it does is it helps bring about 1,100 rights that are given to straight couples, to typical couples, and it now gives those rights to us.
She and Carla met in 1993 through a mutual friend. But the first time Heidi technically saw Carla was in passing.
She was the manager at McDonald's and working on her teaching certificate, and I was a teacher. And I drove through the drive-thru and saw this cute little redhead. And I just thought, my goodness, isn't she cute? And so I drove around again.
Carla, however, is fuzzy on these details.
Yeah, I still can't even remember thinking back over it.
Yes, she did not notice me in the least. But it's been kismet ever since. You know, 19 years.
In those 19 years, the couple adopted 12 children and actively pursued opportunities to wed. The first came in 2004. When city officials in San Francisco began issuing marriage licenses.
Carla and I had the opportunity to fly down. Our friends in Sitka and family in Sitka jumped in right away and said, hey, we'll watch all the kids. You and Carla go down to San Francisco. So we did, and we got married.
A few weeks later, they got a letter from the California Supreme Court. It declared their marriage null and void. They married again 4 years later, in 2008, and this time for keeps. But the marriage still wasn't recognized in the state of Alaska. So, yesterday, when Heidi and Carla went to the courthouse, they expected to have to apply for a third time, but learned from court clerk Leslie Lapine that that wouldn't be necessary.
You just present the certificate that you got from California.
Great.
And that's it.
Actually, that's wonderful. I think that's terrific. What do you think, Carla?
Saves me $60.
Yes, it does, by God. That means I don't have to buy a bigger ring.
And thank you for doing that.
Oh, you're welcome.
Though somewhat anticlimactic, Heidi and Carla expressed gratitude to finally be considered a married couple in the town they call home.
it was very kind and very personable and very supportive, and they were excited for us. And I think that's what I would wish for every couple applying for their first license. And for the couples that have been married elsewhere, I would wish for them the joy and the excitement of knowing that they are equal, that we are equal.
In a press release, Governor Sean Parnell said the state will appeal the same-sex ruling in order to, quote, defend and uphold the law and the Alaska Constitution. But for now, there is a permanent injunction on the enforcement of marriage laws in place. As of Monday afternoon, 11 same-sex couples in Fairbanks, Juneau, and Anchorage had applied for licenses to marry. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Emily Kwong.
Earlier this month, Alaska Governor Sean Parnell announced the winners of the 2014 Governor's North Star Awards for International Excellence. KDLG's Thea Card has more on the winners.
The North Star Award goes to businesses and organizations that contribute significantly to Alaska's trade, investment, and international relations. The award went to five organizations around the state for varying reasons: CORE Alaska for Trade, Alaska World Affairs Council for Education, Iceland Air for Transportation and Visitor Industries, Ketchikan Gero Kaniyama Exchange for Cultural Exchange, and Datum Systems International for Export of Services. Datum Systems International has been developing digital mapping software and hardware since 1987. General Manager of Datum, Jeffrey Yates, says the company changed gears to keep up with the times.
25 years ago, we realized, hey, there's some new digital things coming along, you know, such as personal computers. This is when the Apple IIe first started coming out, and PC computers, the ATs and the original 286s started coming out, and realized that, hey, you know, there's this new digital world coming. So let's look around and see what type of software there is out there to help make our mapping operations more efficient. So we looked around, and there was a couple packages out there that were, they were like $1 million each. And for a small firm, it's like, oh, that was a bit out of our reach. So we looked in-house and said, well, you know, we got a couple talented guys here that can do some programming.
Those programs led to the current Datum strategy. The company serves over 500 engineering companies, government and non-governmental agencies in more than 70 countries worldwide. Parnell says companies like Datum connect Alaska to people and places around the world and benefit the state of Alaska. He says he appreciates the many companies that contribute to Alaska's economy and international relations. In Dillingham, I'm Thea Card.
The Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska has endorsed U.S. Senator Mark Begich for re-election. The council unanimously passed the endorsement resolution, citing his work with subsistence rights, restoring and expanding the Voting Rights Act, and investments in rural broadband access. The Central Council represents 27,000 tribal members and is the predominant tribal organization in Southeast Alaska, representing local tribes. Saturday is the anniversary of the Purchase of Alaska, and in Sitka, the site of the historic sale, locals make it known from the moment that visitors step off the plane. This usually goes over well, but sometimes creates confusion. KCAW's Emily Kwong has more.
Sitka's military past brushed elbows with present-day security last Friday. At 11 a.m., a TSA official called the police to report there was a man with a gun at the airport. But it wasn't just any type of gun.
A replica Civil War-era pistol in a closed leather holster.
It turns out the owner, who wishes to remain anonymous, is part of a group of greeters for Alaska Day.
Hello!
You made it off the plane!
Program of events for Alaska Day?
Stationed at the arrivals gate, the group greets visitors coming off the morning and evening flights into Sitka.
Alaska Day, tonight's a magic show, Centennial Hall.
All are dressed in 1867-era clothing. Betty Conklin organizes the group. She confirmed that on the first day of greeting, one gentleman wore a replica of a Civil War officer's uniform.
If they wore spacesuits in 1867, we'd be there in spacesuits. You know, I mean, if you're going to be period accurate, be period accurate. And that's what the gentleman was attempting to do.
Complete with wool trousers, white kid gloves, and that replica pistol. This alarmed a passenger who tipped off TSA, who called the police. By the time the officer arrived, the greeters were gone. Conklin said the costumed officer was ultimately told to remove the pistol. She wished the situation had been dealt with more directly.
In Alaska, we would have expected somebody to come up and say, hey, this bothers me, or, hey, we got a complaint, you know, put something in the car. But that did not occur. We were treated like big city. It went through the commands before we were even notified of it happening.
Happy last day.
Though the identity of the passenger is unknown, Rebecca Britton remembers being on that very same flight Friday morning.
I was the first one off the plane, so when I got off, I saw everybody in their reenactment costumes, and I was just flabbergasted.
Britton said she didn't notice a gun amid all the bonnets and the hoop skirts. She came in from out of town to be a part of the celebrations in Sitka.
I think it's important to everybody, and they really give it their all to keep it going.
Conklin, who is a jail officer at the Sitka Police Department, was sympathetic to passengers afraid of guns in the airport, replica or otherwise. But she defended the history of the state and implored future visitors to respect it, too.
65 years is a long time to be doing a celebration. So it must mean something to Alaskans to have an Alaska Day. So let's make it a good one.
And a loud one when military reenactors get to actually fire those guns, touching off black powder during Sitka's Alaska Day parade on Saturday. In Sitka, I'm Emily Kwong.
Many of the stories you hear during the KDLG local news can be found online at kdlg.org. You can also find contact information on that website if you would like to provide a comment, correction, or a news tip. That's a check of the local news on listener-supported public radio KDLG. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason, reporting.